I've called him back in for a word. Nick Griffin, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm fine, thank you, Nick. Very well indeed.
Yes, excellent. I think I intended to talk to you anyway about your Twitter ban, but I mean, call me a conspiracy theorist. I think this is all connected. I think you were kicked off Twitter because I don't think they even want the British people to remember that you existed. I don't think they want you in the conversation. I think you came up in Rishi Sunak's speech and then never again. In fact, did you get banned shortly after that?
It was not long after that. It's not exactly a ban, actually. Shortly after that, I went from having no. When it happened was when the Khan Yunis massacre was being talked about and so on. It was almost breaking through into the mainstream media. I think The Guardian covered it. Nobody else in Britain, but it was nearly there. Huge traction, and I started hammering this on Twitter X, and then in particular, I discovered almost by chance the fact that there was an earlier Khan Yunis massacre, exactly the same thing by the IDF, murdered several hundred Palestinians in 1956. And nobody else had picked this up. So I hammered this for 24 hours. And my stats went before then, I was getting, with a good post, I was getting a million hits. I was getting huge numbers of hits overall. And it suddenly crashed, not just a little bit, it crashed so that my stats were showing me that I'd had zero views in the last 30 days.
Wow.
Despite the fact that Twitter are actually paying me money for, you know, the views and all the rest of it, so zero. And then shortly after that, my account was supposedly hacked and taken over. So it's still there, but it's empty. And I've duly appealed to, you know, through the usual channels to get it back. And the thing is this, that even though they were still trying to collect money from me for my blue tick, so I've been paying for the blue tick, and they were still paying me money on account of just being monetized on Twitter, they maintained that I couldn't prove, and they couldn't be sure that it was my account, so they wouldn't give it back to me.
Amazing,
Quite
amazing.
amazing.
Well, it is
Quite
quite
amazing.
amazing, but it's not that actually that shows further that what is going on right now is criminal and it's all underhanded because you weren't we're very used to or I'm very used to getting a hate speech strike or something where they say you broke the terms and conditions. And they don't tell you the line that you said, but they say you can go read the terms and conditions, you broke them. That has not happened here. This is a you were
Indeed.
hacked
Yeah,
and
indeed. Yeah.
yeah.
And they could put it right now, but they obviously won't want to. And the irony of this, you've got Elon Musk as a present, as I'm sure you know. He's wading in, he's on a full-scale Twitter war with Keir Starmer. And so he hasn't just allowed Tommy Robinson back, for instance. He
No.
himself is pushing he's pushing the two-tier policing idea. He's right on that. There is. It's two, it's Britain is under two-tier Keir. Yeah, he is right. But if he was a genuine agent in this, if he was genuinely in favor of free speech, then just at present, the one person you'd let back on Twitter is Nick Griffin, because everybody knows over a certain age that I warned precisely that this sort of thing was happening, was going to happen, you know, some years ago. You know, I told them. So I'm the one that should be back, especially since anyone, by the way, can still find me at present on Telegram, t.me/Nick Griffin. Where I'm the only person from the political sphere in Britain. You're different. You're out of recognizable political people. I'm the only one who's actually saying, yeah, there is a serious problem with immigration and even a serious problem with Islam. There's also an even bigger problem with the Zionist lobby, etc., etc. These people are trying to push us into communal war in Britain. And I'm the only one giving practical things that British people who are angry about what's being done can do, which is an alternative to going out and rioting and looting and burning and causing mayhem. So this is the very moment when someone who is genuinely interested in British politics, which appears that Musk is, genuinely interested in freedom of speech and genuinely interested in helping the Brits to get some kind of sensible long-term solution, he should put me back on. But and I've challenged him on this today. Over on Telegram and ask people still on Twitter to get it out there. But I have no doubt at all that I won't be back on, but Tommy and Co still will be there for a while longer.
Exactly right. I mean, I saw your interview with Syrian Girl, and it was a great interview. But I think what was great about it was that it was posted to Twitter in its full form. So I'll be doing the same. And it's not really my normal place to put long form content. I'm doing it now anyway because you can. But in this instance, it's also a rallying call. It's saying, hey, if Nick Griffin's not allowed his own account, then he's on mine. What are you going to do about it? Are you going to ban me? Or, you know, how is this going to work?
Because I do think, incidentally, that pretty much everyone, probably even including Tommy and co, are going to get banned off of Twitter fairly soon, because even if Keir Starmer wants big trouble, I think it's quite likely he does, because he wants a police surveillance state imposed on Britain. But there's still a limit to how much trouble they want. They want enough trouble to get what they want, but I don't believe that even Keir Starmer and co want Britain to go up like Northern Ireland in 1968, you know, and to have the two communities riven just forever. So I think that when Tommy Robinson and co have served their purpose, I think they'll zap them as well, but we'll see.
Well, do you think it looks like the end of the road for Tommy Robinson? Because this is very extreme what he's charged with now, and he ran away and he's been mentioned by Keir Starmer, and also, I mean, I even saw in the Daily Mail, have you seen about his lawyer ditching him?
Yes.
And the text message that she sent said, between you and the Zionists, you are destroying this country.
It was a very interesting message, wasn't it?
It was. And that was posted in the Daily Mail with no sort of commentary on that Zionism line, or no denouncement of her. And I'm just like, this is watershed, because everybody has heard of Tommy Robinson. And if everybody finds out, he is a spy guilty of treason. So this is the line that I'm pushing, because it's not a joke anymore. No. People like you and me have been called anti-Semite, far right, white supremacist, Nazi. Obviously, you for decades, me only for a couple of years. It's not true. And everybody who has been doing it is guilty of treason, because that is a meme that emerges from a foreign country. Yep. And it's a complete inversion, because obviously that's the white supremacist ethno state. And I focus on it is a white supremacist ethno state, because if you're not a white Jew, then your inherent culture kind of gets battered out of you and replaced with the European Hebrew thingy. So it's all been projection. And the scale of the crime, I think, is what people struggle with, because they kind of giggle when I say that they're guilty of treason. And I'm like, no, I think the only reason you don't believe that is because it's all of them and it's so many of them.
Yeah, indeed. It's a huge operation. And quite a lot of people, especially on the Muslim side, they're just saying, oh, it's Tommy. They're focused on him. Yeah, it goes far wider than that. GB News, the Lotus Eaters. It's an enormous operation funded by millions, if not actually billions, over the last few years, of hardcore Likud supporting American Zionist billionaires are funding this, with an element coming from it as well, also direct in intelligence terms from Israel. But fundamentally, this is, you know, it's not all Jews, it's not even all Zionists, actually. It's one specific faction of Zionism, the Likud bunch, and the ones slightly more to the right of them in Netanyahu's cabinet. And they're the ones doing it. You asked, is this the end of the road of Tommy Robinson? It could be. We may be near the point at which, you know, Anjem Chowdhury has been a scarecrow for ordinary Brits, in the way that Tommy has become a scarecrow for ordinary Muslims and for the left for some years. He's been very useful to the British intelligence services, acting as a lightning conductor to attract young extremists to him and so on. And now it's not to do with these troubles, because they'd locked him away for life on the long term at that, you know, before these troubles kicked off. But his use is spent, and then they get rid of him. And I think Tommy may be in a similar position. If he is, I wouldn't say actually that his terrorism offence, because that's only the offence of refusing to let the police into his phone and presumably laptop. So it's a terrorism offence, but it's not exactly blowing up the Houses of Parliament. But I think he's in more trouble probably if they simply let the tax man loose on him, because he's bringing in vast sums of money. I've heard a guesstimate for £100,000 a month in donations. Twitter, my guess, is £20,000 a month on Twitter, something like that. Then you've got the residual Shilman money, you know, whatever he hasn't blown up his nose, huge sums of money. And I rather doubt that the tax man has seen much of that.
And I would presume he's chasing debt, because that's always been my assessment with a lot of... there's an assumption that everyone who's involved in this mafia system is drinking the blood of babies, etc. But I think a lot of them get stung in much milder ways, and it might be, you know, like property, etc. Because I think he was involved in that before he got involved in EDL.
He was at the age of in his early 20s. He supposedly, as a council carpenter, he has done a few days of genuine work in his life when he was younger. As a council carpenter, he's supposed to have amassed a portfolio of rental properties. Sorry, doesn't happen. So I think it's far more likely that the allegations of him being like that with Muslim drug dealers in Luton and so on are true. I don't know that for sure, but certainly he can't have come by that sort of money legitimately. And how he's still he's still got property when he's been taken through the courts by Muslim lawfare operators and so on, and up against the state, and as I say, no tax, etc. It's really quite astounding. They've all treated him with kid gloves. I think now it's quite likely he won't come back. He probably has crossed a Rubicon. I suspect he's in Cyprus because he's scoping out the ground. All he's got to do is skip to northern Cyprus, i.e. Turkey. And although it's a Muslim state, he then kept himself quiet. There's no extradition treaty with the UK.
Okay.
So I think he could well end up there. I certainly would be quite surprised now if he comes back to Britain.
But yeah,
we will see. He's still got very powerful friends. And again, everyone thinking, oh, look at Tommy, he's caused all this trouble, he's helped spark this. Well, other people have as well. I mean, in fact, it was Danny Tomo, obviously, one of his lieutenants, who put out the fake news about the Southport slaughter being done by a Muslim who's just arrived off the boats, which has undoubtedly stirred things up, or did. It sort of kicked things off initially. But then the Muslim Defence League, very loose-knit operation, got its big push when in Middlesbrough, Nick Lowles of Hope Not Hate put out the allegation that Muslim women had been attacked by gangs of white men with acid. So, you know, he's responsible for that. And probably most of all, Suella Braverman. Remember last November when Tommy and co were saying, oh, the pro-Palestinian demonstrators, the wicked Muslims, they're going to desecrate the cenotaph, when they never had done and never have, you know, haven't done since. Suella Braverman, as a senior Conservative MP, was singing the same song and promoting that. And I think that obviously it wasn't the Southport massacre that kicked this off, because that was three little children horribly murdered, but the Ariana Grande concert bombing in 2017, 22 murdered, and it didn't have the same effect. So there's more than that, and it's a cumulative effect of the British people simply having had far more than they can stomach anymore. The elite treating the British people with utter contempt over Brexit. This goes down, a lot of it is to what they did with Brexit. 17.4 million Brits voted to leave Europe, overwhelmingly on account of the need, it was very clear, the desire to get a grip on our borders and to send our political elite a message that they had to clamp down very vigorously on immigration and on the problems that immigration causes. And instead of listening and doing something about it, the collective political elite, the Tory party as well as the Labour party, spat in the face of the British people, didn't give them anything at all, replaced Christian Polish immigrants with hundreds of thousands of Africans and Indians and a smaller number of Muslims per year. And everyone's looking again, focusing on the boats coming in at Dover. A few hundred every month. There's 4,000 a day come through the airport legally. That's what they've done with mass immigration. They say the British people voted to tell them to stop it. And instead, they simply said, well, OK, we'll stop the Poles coming in. You can have 500,000 Africans instead. It's an appalling thing. And that's really what has driven the British people to this. And yes, you've got people who have been wound up by Tommy Robinson and co, particularly about Muslims. And again, sections of the Muslim community in Britain has behaved very badly over many, many years. But whose fault primarily is that? People say, well, you know, that community should have got a grip on the groomers. The grooming gangs were from their community. They're to blame. Well, I'd have a lot more sympathy with that message if our community had done anything about the groomers. If some of our politicians, media, police had done something about it. If there were dozens of British fathers, uncles and older brothers in prison for confronting Muslim grooming gangs, then you could turn around and say that the Muslim community should have confronted Muslim grooming gangs, but they didn't. Nobody did. So they're all to blame. But all these things have been, you know, rolled together, and we've now got this state when Britain is very close to tipping over into what will be actually a civil war.
Yeah, I wanted to get a, you know, a multi-pronged analysis on this riot, because from my perspective, I hated Saturday. I had a really bad day Saturday because basically everything I've devoted my life to the past 5 years is trying to prevent this or situations from this from happening, whether it's interviewing people like you to say, hey, he's not that bad, whether it's trying to be a good advocate for nationalism myself whilst not looking how people might expect, or even just going gung-ho at the Tommy Robinson movement and saying this is a sham that's built to trick you and this was the end result with it. But and I don't want to discount like the real frustration that you were always a voice for with the BNP, and your whole career is a voice for that frustration so that situations like that won't happen. So I think my analysis is that we need to look at Tommy Robinson and Danny Tomo as the fellas that lit the match and stoked the fire, and they're guilty of arson, basically, for setting it off. And even the Metro did a really thorough report on exactly what Danny Tomo had done. So that's why I say, you know, I've seen the Zionists are wrecking our country in the Daily Mail without any negative comment, a really thorough assessment of what Danny Tomo actually did on the day in the Metro. That's great. So then you've got the discontent out from that, where I'm just sort of like, I'm just very, very sad to see English people committing crime en masse. Mm-hmm. But I think we have to acknowledge that, yeah, that was Britain basically gnashing its teeth and saying, we are fed up. We tried every other route to do this, almost like Hamas, right? If you compare to the 2019 March of Return, where they went en masse with white flags,
the border,
right? Take that as analogous for the Brexit vote. They got gunned down. We got flooded with immigrants and told that we're racist, low information voters, and just distracted with them trying to frustrate Brexit for 4 years, so we didn't even talk about anything else. Yeah. That was awful. I would interpret these riots as a huge roar from a certain section of society saying, yeah, we don't want you here, unapologetically.
Mm.
And,
there's that. And then the other factor now, you talk about the arsonists. Yep. Danny Tomo flicked the match into a powder keg already very carefully built and stocked by the entire British political and media and cultural elite. And now it's Keir Starmer is pouring fuel on that. In fact, you reposted one of my Telegram posts earlier on today about this. You know, there's a fire, let's pour petrol on it.
Yes.
Because part of it is about just mass immigration, but a lot of it is about when a minority, but a significant minority of immigrants behave badly, just as a slightly smaller significant minority of British people behave badly. But when some of these immigrants behave, and if you involve if you bring in large numbers of young men of military age from ruined war zone countries, of course you're going to get people behaving badly. So when that's happened constantly, the police and the courts, everybody knows it, for years have treated them differently to how they would treat indigenous people in this country. So you have got two-tier policing and two-tier courts. You've had people let off having been found guilty of rape on the basis they didn't know it was illegal, but they've had suspended sentences, whereas you've got white nationalists in prison. Okay, some of them are stupid Nazi silly kids, but they still shouldn't be in prison for months and even years for thought crime, for speech crime, for saying that immigration's a bad thing and so on. And, you know, again, you could do this. They could do this once or twice. They could do this 100 times, but they've done it thousands of times, and this also has made people very angry. And Keir Starmer is just making it even worse, because as I'm sure you saw since Saturday, especially last night in Birmingham, you've got very large crowds of young Muslim men just storming around the place and controlling the streets, and sometimes behaving themselves and clearly being there actually in a defensive posture, and other times going and attacking elderly men outside pubs and dragging people out of cars and so on. Now, if the police were getting tough with them, the British people would say, okay, so they got tough with rioters in Liverpool. And there's no excuse for looting shoe shops if you want to protest against immigration. So fair enough, get tough on them, but they haven't. The Muslims doing that are basically untouched. And it's driving people mad with anger. And it's also emboldening that community, or the more radical elements in this community. It's very important for people to realize that you say Muslim, there's not one block. it's not just the fact they're Sunni and Shia. Within the Muslims, you've got various different levels of integration within our society. Most of them, very sensibly, don't want to integrate with the LGBT, trans, you know, horrors and all the rest of it, but they still recognize themselves as part of this society through a spectrum through to hardcore jihadis, who the Wahhabi types, the real Islamic radicals. Until about 2008 or 2010, they were getting vast sums of money from Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. And they were, I remember at the time, I was in touch with some Muslims even then, and some I just met at random on planes and stuff and talked with them. And constantly they were saying about 20 to 25% of our young men are now highly radicalized by this Wahhabi poison that your governments have allowed simply to pour into Britain. And the Saudis stopped that in about 2010. And that very radicalized, very fundamentalist Islam has been in decline amongst British Muslims. And I've talked to some more recently who say, yeah, everything that's happened to your working class community 15, 20 years ago, in terms of marriage breakdowns and drugs and alcoholism, it's happening to us as well.
Yeah.
I've had one telling me that when he's dealing with, he's a Muslim lawyer in London, when he's dealing with Muslim women whose marriages are broken up, the most common complaint isn't that husbands beat them. The most common complaint is that the husbands and the young men spend all their time playing on video games and aren't interested in the family and all the rest of it, spend their money on booze. So they're going down the same road as us. So that's the community that's out there. They're not all hardcore fanatics, but when we had the riots in Oldham in 2009, for instance, I remember the chants of the, you know, the Muslim mobs and so on. A lot of it was whose streets are streets, you know, Nazi scum off our streets, these things. They were not chanting Allahu Akbar, which is what the crowds are now. So they're much more radicalized. And although highly radical Islam has been in retreat in Britain, every time someone like Robinson or Fox or whatever puts out something talking about mosques and saying that these Muslims, the ones even who are there, actually only in self-defense mode, every time that they say these people are about to take over the country and they're a menace, rumors go out that mosques should be attacked, it pushes more of those young Muslim men towards the real extremists. It's just like in 1968 Belfast, the Protestants, still the majority in the majority of areas, attacking ordinary Catholics because they were Catholic, pushing them right into the hands of the IRA. It's complete and total madness.
No, it makes perfect sense from an agenda point of view that you want everyone scared of Muslims and you want as many of those Muslims as possible to be really scary. So yeah, that's how it works. But I feel like everyone's got a grievance at the moment and you can pick and choose and do a pick and mix with it. So that's why I'm trying to have as many different inputs as possible. Like if you are someone who's not white who lives in Britain, you have every right to feel all scared because this has just kicked off. So their reports are...
Everyone's going to get scared. Just one more thing on that before we move on to whatever else you want to talk about. I wanted to say you and your audience, I'm sure, would have seen today kicking around on social media. There's footage of a rally stroke self-defense demonstration by Muslims in Birmingham last night, where the speakers are saying what they really think. And every now and again, the chant goes up with the whatever it is, and then Allahu Akbar and so on. And I'm sure that the majority of white Brits watching that will be horrified. And all they'll really hear is the crowd chanting Allahu Akbar. They won't really listen to what's being said, and they won't really think about it. And you see, that's a community which is united and prepared to come out to defend. They think, whether it's true or not, they think that there's going to be an EDL attack on their mosque and on their women. That's what they've heard from the likes of Hope Not Hate. And they think it's true, so they're out there. In case it happens, they're going to defend their people. Should British people looking at this think that their community is wrong for being prepared to defend their holy places and their women, or that our community is wrong for not doing so? Is their community wrong for having large numbers of disciplined, whatever else you think about them, when the speakers are speaking, you could hear a pin drop? It's only when they stop speaking that they all chant. Compare that with a rabble that you get at any supposedly patriotic white English demonstration. So are they to blame because they're disciplined and united? Or is our people more to blame because they're ill-disciplined and totally ununited? Are the Muslims to blame for the fact that the police, they're so organised and effective if they want to kick off, that the police are terrified of them? as opposed to the fact that the police have such contempt for our people, because we have become a contemptuous people. They've got such contempt for our people that they feel they can kick seven bells out of white protesters, whether they're legitimate protesters or scumbag looters. They can kick seven bells out of them and there'll be no comeback on the cops. Who's to blame again? Is it the Muslims or is it our community? And my message to our people is that this is almost certainly because the Zionists want it, the Wahhabis want it, sections of the elite want it all to kick off. It's going to kick off into communal violence. So we need to be prepared when the police can no longer do it. As a matter of self-defense is no offense, genuine English common law, you're entitled to defend your own community, but not to attack other people's communities. Mm. You're entitled to replace the police if the police aren't there, but not to attack the police on site for no provocation if they are there. Rather than people looking at those Muslims and being horrified and hating them, they need to look at those Muslims and think, you know what, actually, much though I hate the fact they're here, I hate, you know, what could happen, wouldn't it be better if our community was more like theirs?
That's it, is that despite the label far right and being concerned about mass immigration and being sort of representatives of these things, eventually you start to really see, well, Muslims through a certain lens, especially through a time like now, which is the Tommy crowd are terrified of them and they think that they're quote unquote taking over, which demographically is true. And their religion,
don't like it, have lots of kids. It's as simple as that.
Their faith does command them to do that. So
you're right to talk about the faith. Again, a lot of people, a subconscious reason for disliking them is that they're from this community which is very unified and has a faith and has traditions. And our community is not only divided, it's also lost its traditions and it's lost its faith. You can't blame them for having a religion they would die for. The problem is that our people no longer have a religion for which they would die for. That needs to be put right. And it will be put right, because this is all going to not just radicalise people, it's also going to force not just British people, Irish people, Europeans, all over, French, Germans, Italians, because this is going to kick off everywhere. It will force our people back to religious faith and our societies will be that much the better for it.
I'm saying exactly the same thing, because I would say these riots are a comparable moment in our history to Charlottesville in America, which was about 2016, something like that. Which was a white pride riot, or not a riot. I think that was supposed to be a much less damaging event than this lot were. But it was white pride as the sort of, or we are the white people and we deserve these rights as its central sort of theme. And it didn't work because the establishment can demonize you for that, because you've got white privilege and white power and there's all this sort of collective stuff with it. I believe that that's solely in America they've got that problem, whereas there is no problem with saying you're a British nationalist or an English nationalist. But I still believe that these were white riots that happened at the weekend. And what will happen, because it has happened in America after Charlottesville, is the whole nation regrouped, or at least everyone with this line of thinking, and they have come back much more Christian. I would say they appear much more Christian in 2024. It's right at the front. And I do believe that we're going to go through the same thing. We are years too late, because there's going to be a tremendous amount of fallout from this, where loads of people get arrested and charged for what they did
and imprisoned for very long sentences.
Exactly. And that means that this attack strategy was foolish. And that was my perspective, because, you know, I think it was according to a Christian ethic. And that was, I think, why it rocked me to my core on the day. And I do believe that's what's going to happen. There's one more thing that I really want to bring to your attention, which is, so if Tommy Robinson and Tomo and Loza Fox and even Tice and the rest of them were stoking this and lighting the match and letting it burn and then waiting until Sunday to denounce anyone. There's other stuff that's been going on Telegram, which I shared something which was a massive Fed post from from Southport Wake Up. Well, this looks really suspicious, rather than just being some idiot. It looks like someone has sent me a message, so I'm trying to paraphrase it, that there are a few Telegram channels with really extreme content with Ukrainian hooligans in them. They appear to be doubling in size every single day. Some of the names would be Southport Wake Up, Welsh Nationalist, The New Firm, Ultras Not Reds. So, that's something to bring.
Well, there's two possibilities here. One is that they genuinely are Ukrainians, because I met Ukrainian nationalists, people now in Azov, Svoboda, the then opposition party, and so on, back in about 2010. And I've never met more extreme and unreasonable Nazis in my life.
Wow.
And I've met quite a few. Really, really extreme. And their idea was, we're going to take over. This was before the Maidan CIA coup. Their idea, they said, we're going to take over the opposition of the government. We're going to take over the demonstrations. We're going to overthrow the government. Then we're going to overthrow the liberals and the Jews that we're working with. And then we are going to export a specifically white Nazi extremism to the whole of Europe. That was their actual aim. You know, highly unreasonable and unrealistic people. They've lost, you know, the war in Ukraine. They've lost. NATO's lost. It's effectively finished by the mopping up. And large numbers of them have already come to Western Europe. More of them are going to come. And we are going to face a problem with genuine neo-Nazi, real neo-Nazi terrorism, because you're going to have basically neo-Nazi drug and criminal gangs of Ukrainians in exile. Many of them that were hit with their heads, the ones who have been at the front and survived, with their heads completely screwed up by what they've gone through. It's going to be extraordinarily dangerous. It's either that or, equally, of course, where does the Ukrainian intelligence services and hardcore hooligans end, and where does the CIA begin? Because they are the same thing. And again, people call you and me, you know, anti-Semites, because we talk about Zionism and the deeper problems of Talmudism that lies beneath that. But let me say this, that I think also there's an element whereby, if you're only looking at Zionism, you're missing a point, that the parallel is George Soros. Everyone, so he's obviously funded all these left-wing organizations and LGBT, etc. And for years, people in the know, they've looked at Soros and only gone as far as seeing this very ugly individual, saying Soros is Jewish, it's all a plot, protocols of Zion, blah, 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 without just noticing one step further behind, that Soros and the National Endowment for Democracy work hand in glove, and the National Endowment for Democracy is a recognized CIA front. Mm-hmm. So similarly, when everyone is looking at, you know, the Zionist provocation, Tommy Robinson, funded by the Zionist, Shulman Fellow, etc., standing on a tank with, you know, with Mossad blessing on the Golan Heights, all this, they're not seeing the fact that the American deep state, long before they were effectively captured by the Likudniks, going back to before the First World War, they incited and encouraged a war in Europe, with the war aim being to destroy the European empires, which were a rival to growing United States power. They incited, encouraged, and came in late likewise to the Second World War, because their war aim there wasn't to defeat the Nazis or block the Soviets. Their key war aim was to destroy the British Empire, to finish off the French Empire, and so on. And they achieved that there. And then you look more recently at, you know, the Iraq, Libya, etc., what they're trying to do in Taiwan, what they're trying to do to Iran. This is, and treating Israel effectively, Israel is their unsinkable aircraft carrier on the edge of the Mediterranean, just as Britain is their unsinkable aircraft carrier on the edge of the Atlantic. And behind, even above the Zionist element, there's the immensely powerful American deep state. And if people are just driven mad with this, so they become crazed anti-Semites, it's even easier to demonize them. And it's the CIA, etc., who promoted, it's not just Britain, since 2014 or whatever, they promoted this enormous influx to every country in Western Europe of young men of fighting age from failed Muslim states, because they've made them fail. And this hasn't been done because they love those states, because they love those people. I believe it's been done because they've deliberately imported into Europe a potential civil war, which they can set off at any time. And if you think that's odd, that's precisely the playbook the CIA used in Yugoslavia, where they went in and they didn't, they said to the Croats, we're with you because you're, you know, old anti-communists, etc. We'll back you. You go to war against the wicked Serbs. They also were talking to the Serb extremists and saying, you know, we understand how you feel about the Muslims because we've got a problem too. You'd be ready to go to war against them. And then they were going to the Muslims saying, you know, we understand you've got to defend yourselves. We don't accept genocide anywhere in Europe. And they armed and told them they'd support them. So the three sides of the destruction of the former Yugoslavia felt empowered to take up arms and were funded and armed by the same CIA because they were determined to break up the former Yugoslavia as a way of pushing back Russian influence, and also of a way of making sure that there was no alternative system for countries around the world to look at other than the American endorsed one, because Yugoslavia wasn't properly communist and it wasn't fully capitalist. It was a third way, so it had to be destroyed, and that's what's going on here as well.
Yeah, interesting. Sorry, we're on limited time, so yep. I want to make sure that we fit this sure. in because this is going to go on Twitter, as I said, and Twitter has very much concerned me today because, like, what you've just covered there is that everyone is sold a grievance narrative. I was trying to cover mm-hmm. it earlier, and it, yep. and the tensions You're are right. arisen. So at this exact point right now, I don't really identify as a nationalist who's fighting for the right to, you know, make racist jokes and all the rest of it that I was doing the past 5 years and say these things publicly, because clearly we now have license to. So it would be really, really stupid for me to just continue the same battle plan. And my observation is that there's foreign meddling going on left, right and center today mm-hmm. in terms of there are people that don't live here, that have never lived here, that are weighing in on this issue. And they're taking a very specific line, which is the same line that you'd hear out of Lawrence Fox or Tommy Robinson. And I'm not saying that the people that have risen up don't have the legitimate grievance that these people are saying. What I'm saying is that Elon Musk is not involved. He doesn't mm-hmm. live here. And I saw people like Lauren Chen, who claims to, she says she had a British passport because I think she was born here. But this is like a mixed race woman that lives in Canada or America and comments on the politics over there. And I thought this is getting quite disturbing, actually, because this is the global white nationalist movement telling us lot how to think. And I've always been kind of against that because it's my country. It's, and I know there's a white alliance, but what I'm seeing right now is like, no, I can't have every commentator from around the world who, you know, is alt-light or whatever, weighing in on this and stoking the fire and saying, no, white people have every right to do this and they didn't do anything wrong, because they did do something wrong at the weekend and they're going to get punished for it, but they're being encouraged to take on this victim narrative. And I also think that the Christian element is so important, because if you identify as like a white guy or a black guy and everything's out to get you, then you imbibe the victim narrative. And that's what Tommy is feeding them. But if you have faith, then you know that there is somebody who always had it worse than you, who is the Messiah. And you kind of hold that in your head at the back, or I have at least anyway. And I think that is the defining difference, which means that you can shed that, like, I'm a white guy and we live in an anti-white society, because you really do see good and evil and you expect it. You anticipate you're going to have a tough time if you take up the fight. Don't expect to be anything less than a victim.
Okay. I've got the same problem with foreigners interfering as I have actually with the likes of people with enormous amounts of money from what they're doing, like Tommy Robinson, and also with the anonymous creeps all over social media who, behind anonymity, they're pushing ordinary working class whites into a really confrontational position. And they're pushing basically for race war, and they're telling people, you know, we can kick them all out, you know, I've got a particular problem with the phrase mass deportations. You put it out a couple of days ago, actually. That's nonsense. The British police, the British army, and all the EDL hooligans in the country couldn't deport the Muslims of Bradford, let alone cleansing Britain and so on. All that's going to happen, these people with the money from abroad, the anonymous ones, they're going to push until we get a civil war in Britain with the lie that someone can win this civil war, which no one can. But they're not going to be doing the fighting. They're not going to be, no, Tommy Robinson isn't going to give a penny to help internally displaced refugees when white people have to flee from Birmingham and end up in the countryside in Northamptonshire. None of these people are going to do a thing. None of these people are going to suffer. It's always poor communities at the front line who suffer. Muslims and whites and Sikhs, everyone else is going to get involved. And this war will go on for 30-odd years. And then at the end of that time, just like in Northern Ireland, we'll still be here. They'll still be here. And the surviving leaders, just like Ian Paisley and the Republic, the IRA men and so on, they'll sit down, and when either the Americans or the Chinese pay them enough money, they'll sit down and they'll all chum up and they'll have some leprous kind of peace agreement. And all that the ordinary people will have is shattered communities and filled graveyards. And it's utterly monstrous.
Yes, and one particular danger that's going on right now, I see Elon Musk's most recent tweets have all been about our justice system, basically, mm-hmm. because he's been tweeting people who've been arrested for saying the wrong thing on social media and saying, oh, I can't believe this. Is this the Soviet Union? And it's like, I refuse to believe that Elon Musk doesn't know that the UK doesn't have the First Amendment if he is supposedly the richest and most successful mm-hmm. man on earth. This yeah. seems, is he a teenager? And also there's a sort of disrespect element. Genuinely, if you don't like it, leave. Our system works according to this. And yes, it is two-tier, and yes, it is unfair. But I also take a certain amount of pride in the fact that we do have judges and we operate according to this jury system, even if it's very, very crooked. It's more that, like, as someone who's not just a journalist, but I'm trying to make sure that people avoid falling into these traps and get sent to prison, I get very, very fed up when I see people acting shocked at things that you should know are crimes, because we talk about it all the time. We talk about how there's a two-tier policing system and that you can get sent away for this and that, and there's a limit around your speech. And I have them in my chat as well. I have people using slurs, and I say, look, don't use slurs in here, because you know that I'm trying to present the arguments in good English, basically. Yep. And you come along and do that. And these anonymous guys, you know, how many American accounts backed up by the likes of Elon Musk and all these other commentators saying, I can't believe the British don't have the right to say whatever they want, are goading you, yes, the English, into yeah. saying something that can get you gone to yeah. prison. Yeah. yeah.
Well, I'd have more time for Elon Musk's commitment to free speech and to justice if he'd give me back my Twitter feed.
Absolutely. So shall we start a hashtag, Nick?
Please do. Thank you very much. Good speaking with you.